With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Let's start. So, Ruth, we're back.
Is that it? Let's start.
What did you
like? Straight in.
But what, I'm so thrilled to see you. It seems like you've been away for ages.
It feels
and ages.
Like I have. It's only... So, for anyone who doesn't know, this might be your first episode. I don't know what I've
been
doing.
Well, it is season three, episode one.
Yeah.
So, if you're just picking us up on season three,
I started university last Saturday, so I've been away for about 10 days or whatever, and it feels like
forever.
A lifetime. Yeah, it feels like I've always been there.
It is a whole different life, though, because you were saying
it is
to,
indeed.
Yeah, you were saying to me before you went that, you know, you live with these people, i.e. myself and your mother, for
these people.
For 18 years, and you're suddenly plucked away from these people.
And also I've had, like, a lot of the same friends for...
Yeah,
a decade or more,
and now you're making new friends. And these friends you make at university,
a lot of people say that they're your friends for life.
They'll be your friends for the rest
of
your life.
I'm sure there's a statistic that is like most people meet their future husband or wife at uni as well. Like it really does like shape your life and whatever.
It does. So tell me about it. What's been going on?
It's hard to sum up just like that. Like tell. What do you want to know?
What I want to know is, well, your first week was Freshers Week.
Yeah.
And you'll have shared this experience with students up and down the country. Basically, people you didn't know at the time were sort of feeling your way and going out
and drinking and stuff. Yeah, just we went out, like, most nights. It is tiring and things, but I guess it's kind of like how you get to know people as you all play, like, drinking games with each other and stuff. But the first couple of days were so hard.
You did phone. You were homesick.
It was like literally with like the first two or three days that were just felt so lonely. Like you, and it's weird because you feel so lonely. I did at least feel so alone. But you're with so many other people. There's literally always someone there, and especially I'm in a twin room. I have to share a room, and so. There's literally someone always there.
Yes.
I'm never on my own, really, very often. I'm a bit more now, but in that first few days I wasn't. But you still feel just alone.
We won't talk too much about your roommate because we don't want to...
No, don't.
Yeah, confidentiality, we don't want to breach it. Fine.
But I do have a roommate, just to let you know.
To let you know. And a lot of people thought that would be... a nightmare for you, being sort of like an only child in that your older siblings have all gone away.
Yeah, like lived at home. I'm very lucky that I've always had a room to myself and stuff. And it still is hard, like, just you have different kind of ways. You know, everyone has their, like, weird things and, like, ways that they like stuff done and whatever, and you can't mix.
But that's all the other people have their weird ways. You're perfectly...
No, but you do, but you don't realise that a lot of the stuff is also, like... Because you never have to share a space with people who aren't, like, your close family. Most people don't. You don't realise that there's certain stuff that you like to do that is not what everyone else does. And you kind of have to be quite malleable and accept that, like, you've just got to be chilled out and say, this doesn't matter. And I think, like, and kind of deciding on what is okay and what's actually something that you need.
Tell you what we'll do. We'll actually test the levels, first of all.
What was all that?
That was just us talking, but we'll test the levels.
Preamble.
We'll test the levels with a couple of one-liners in traditional fashion. Despite the fact that it's a brand new series, I think we keep up this tradition whereby I quote to you a fantastic one-line joke. This is one from...
Fantastic. See, we've started using that loosely.
This is very loosely. This is Nick Dixon, who I'm not familiar with. But his one-liner is, I took my nephew to the swings. He kept complaining that it goes up too high. I said, just shut up and push. Here's our good friend Olaf Falafel. I wasn't particularly close to my dad before he died, which was lucky because he trod on a landmine. We ought to make it clear, you're at the University of York and you're studying modern languages.
Studying French and Spanish.
French and Spanish, but that comes under modern languages.
It is under modern languages, but that's not like my degree.
No, but you have to do linguistics.
Yeah, I have to do one linguistics module.
Right. So what,
each term.
What's that? How does that work?
So I'm doing syntax, which is just the study of kind of words and word phrases, and we kind of did just kind of sort of I've only had one lecture on it, so I can't tell you exactly, but we did a lot about sort of grammar and grammar rules and how we decide those and stuff.
But that's all in English. That's in English.
That's in English.
Then when you, then
I do French language and society and French grammar. So those are both in French pretty much the whole time. But at the moment, for the French grammar, she'll say a bit in English, but really the French language in society was pretty much entirely in French, and you're also made to speak to each other in French. It's quite intense, like language. Then I have three other modules. I do Spanish language skills, Spanish grammar, and Spanish language in society. So that's quite intense because they need to get you to a really high level really quick, because I'm doing Spanish from scratch.
And all your lecturers are from the country that they're
from the place that they're teaching
France
in.
France or Spain?
Yeah. I think they're both Spanish. I'm not sure whether either of them might be from like Latin America. Mm-hmm. But I think they're both actually Spanish. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you do about Spanish society as well?
A bit, yeah. We've not started doing much of that yet, because at the moment it's just trying to get you to understand stuff. We did about how we were reading stuff about how Spanish is like a universal language that's in the Spanish language and society seminars.
How do you mean it's a universal language? I mean, not like English.
So, like, Spanish is spoken in 21 different countries. 400 million people have it as their native language. 40 more million have it as their the language they've studied. But then it's spoken in like loads of other places. It's the only language spoken on all five continents, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
So your first day, which was a couple of Saturdays ago, your mum dropped you off with all your stuff.
That's the weirdest part. We got there at about 1:30.
Mm.
But then we probably only started to properly do my room at about 2 or something. Then I think she left at about 5, sorted out all my room. I had to go and buy some like blue tack and stuff, so she did that with me. Then we went for like a coffee, and then she left. And that's the weirdest bit.
Well, go on. Tell me what you felt when your mum left.
It's just what I didn't feel like. I didn't cry or anything. I know some people probably do, but I didn't actually like cry. It was just I don't know. It's just such a weird feeling. Mm. Like say, because you're saying goodbye, but you're also not. You know, it's not a big goodbye. Like I was going to see her really soon. It's not the same as if you were moving to another country and that really was it for 6 months or a year. Yeah, it's just such a strange feeling. And you stood there and it's kind of like, it's almost awkward in a way, or uncomfortable. You don't know what to say. And I've spoken to people since and they said, yeah, I just like went into my room and like just cried.
Yeah.
Because it's just like so unsettling.
I mean, the first night that you weren't there did feel, I know you've been away in the past, but not for long periods, but you have been away.
But, well, I went away for about a month over the summer and stuff. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's
on
not
and
like.
Off, though. We were still sort
no,
of.
No, no, but when I went on holiday, I was away for about 23 days or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, quite a while. Like, I've still not been away that long, but it just feels different.
But it did feel completely different from when you went away, you know. And we would be, myself and your mum, we would be empty nesters if it weren't for the fact that I'm finally trying to get your big brother on the housing ladder. And he's now staying with us before he moves out to his own flat in, he says, 8 to 12 weeks, but on both sides of the equation, we're hoping it's going to be a little bit quicker than that. But I think his 12-year-old solicitors probably take some time to
this is the segment of the podcast where we don't speak about university life or current affairs. You just slag off my brother.
No, I'm not slagging your brother. I'm slagging off his solicitors. But anybody who's ever bought a house would, an estate agent is even worse. you know, because you're not familiar with this yet, and maybe you never will be, but being part of Generation Rent, but they're the worst. They're the worst. And people say that...
you've just started talking about solicitors. You know, this is like the rebrand. It's not going to be all more focused on like university and stuff. This is like a large segment solicitors.
I'm
kidding. Go on. Generation Rent. I'm never getting on the housing ladder.
Well, you'll be lucky if you get... No, I'm sure you'll get on the housing ladder. And when you do, you'll think, I wish I'd let my dad have that tirade against solicitors and estate agents all those years ago, because he was absolutely right in saying that murderers are always, you know, when murderers are put into the back of the Black Mariah by the police, they put a coat over their head so they won't be recognised because of the shame of it. And yet, estate agents and solicitors can walk down the street.
It's quite a good profession. A lot of people want to be solicitors.
Yeah.
You're essentially a lawyer if you're a solicitor.
No, I think if you're a solicitor, you're essentially a bloodsucker, but that's just my view and isn't, you know, a little bit away from the general tenor of this. But back to university. So there you are in this sort of situation where you're homesick and you're feeling lonely and you're a bit heartbroken and you're starting a new life.
And then you've got to go into this, like, common room full of people and start introducing yourself. So I'd met some of the people on my floor earlier, and one of them had messaged to be like, oh, we're all in the common room, it's quite a good time to meet people if you're all done. And mum had like just left or whatever, so then I had to go take like a really deep breath and like put on my, like, you know, your best face, and everyone's feeling the same, you know, you don't want to be boring. There's a lot of pressure in the still like that a bit now, but there's a lot of pressure in the first week to be like cool and chilled out and fine about everything and whatever. So you've got to take a deep breath and walk that. I walked downstairs, the common room's on the floor below mine, walked into the common room just absolutely full. It's also weird because there was loads and loads more boys than girls, so there was about probably 40 people in this tiny little room, and I would say there was only about 6 or 7 girls in there.
Really?
It's like really it's less like that now. I think that it's just like
the boys arrived before
more,
the girls.
Is I don't know. There was. Set? I think there was just. I think there is more boys than girls in my flat anyway. But I did. I walked in.
When you say
and it
your
was just
flat,
so intimidating.
Do you mean your
so the people who share my kitchen and the kitchen one over. That's right. My floor. That's my flat.
Right.
Yeah, just like so intimidating, and the room was so full of people. It absolutely stank as well. It was like like you could taste like sweat in the air. It's absolutely vile.
Boys, eh?
It was just so full, and you just have to sit down and do what course do you do and all that.
When your brother was at home and he had a friend in, we used to go in his bedroom and say, "Oh, it smells of boy in here."
Yeah,
so it was a very strong like smell of boy.
Yeah. The rooms just get really, like, feisty really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you are. You've introduced yourself. And now you have friends.
Yeah, it's fine now. It was like, it'd literally been 2 days, and I was thinking in my head, oh, my God, I've made no friends. What am I going to do? Blah, blah, blah. But you have to put it into perspective and think, it genuinely has only been 2 days. Like, of course you're not best friends with anyone yet. That's a ridiculous thing to ask, but... You do make friends really, really quick because it's just such an intense environment, especially with the people who are sharing your kitchen or in your flat or whatever, because they are right there all the time. It's less so with your course mates. That's more of like a normal friendship where you get to know each other.
And you've become hugely popular because of your colourful Leeds accent, I believe.
No, I've not become popular before. People just take the piss all the time. Like a bit, like...
So, because the people
just
are from
certain words, most of the people I've met are southern, really.
Yeah,
my flat is there's one boy who's from Scunthorpe.
And you've got a best friend from Lancaster.
Best friend, no, one of the girls on my floor is from Lancaster as well.
But she's
my roommate
your
is an international student. But most of the other people are, southern.
And they like the way, specifically, you say trainers.
Trainers, yeah. It's mainly, to be honest, it's mainly the sound.
Like
no, girl, la, ter, fur, wur, sir.
So have you been using the word faux a lot?
Oh, yeah, faux is a regular. No, I think it's no, like when, you know, if you're speaking about something. That's why I struggle with that word.
The Leeds accent is a very distinctive accent, isn't it?
I think that's what it is. I think that a lot of people are generally northern. But not Leeds. I also think that it's because when you hear this, I'm only realising this now, I think, when you hear regional accents on TV, you hear like a general Northern, or you hear like a Newcastle or a Liverpool or a Birmingham, people know what that sounds like. But you don't very regularly, apart from maybe like Mel B, hear a proper Leeds, like distinctive Leeds.
But if you've been listening to this podcast through the first two series, you'll know exactly what Mel B talks like. Because you do a wickedly accurate impersonation of Mel B.
It's just my normal voice.
Let's have Mel B.
Hello, I'm Mel B. Deeper than that, isn't it, really? She's got anyway, this is regardless. But
yes, but unless they've been watching Mel B. Or indeed Keith Lemon.
Yeah.
That's another place to pick up a
Leeds. But Keith Lemon's is like too much.
Two Leeds.
It's what it feels like put on. I don't find Keith Lemon funny.
No, I don't find it funny, but the accent is spot on Leeds.
Yeah, true.
Spot on.
Yeah. But then someone said to me this, or I can't remember what the actual context was, but they were talking about, they were like, I can't remember, they were like, oh, M&S, do you have that in Leeds? And I was like, M&S started in Leeds, you know, because people think it's fancy.
Yeah.
But it started in Leeds, so I was pleased to
You put them right, did you? Well done. A lot of people from Guildford, you were saying, in Surrey.
Guildford, yeah. I think it's just probably because a lot of people who commute to London.
That part of Surrey, Virginia Water and Guildford, and there's all these little towns in Surrey, that is commuter country.
But
it's not, you know, office cleaners aren't commuting from Guildford. People who work in the city, finance, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I would also just add that the other thing that's weird is that because Freshers Week is like this massive party week where everyone just goes out and every week and there's all these events and all the club nights and whatever, there's so much pressure to be like, Freshers Week has to be the best week of my life. It has to be this amazing, great party week. It just should be so brilliant. But like, why would it be so great? It's the first week you've met people. Like, why would that be the greatest nights out?
But you did manage to fall over.
Oh, I fell over so bad. There's no way to... Yeah. It was embarrassing as well, actually. But there's no way to, like, properly show how bad it is. Like, my knee was, like, so bloody. Like, blood just everywhere. And, like, the cuts are quite deep. You saw them. Mm. Shall I show you again?
Yes, and I think you'll survive them.
It's pretty bad, though, isn't it?
It's a little bit bad. It's
like, look, that's kind of yellowy as well.
No, it's not too bad. You'll live. I don't think that's gone septic or anything like that.
No, and I had like grazes on my arms and stuff. I'm like fully like.
Is that the only? Were you the only one to get injured of your crowd?
Yep.
You
know, yeah. Just me.
Well done. Well, it's a sort of badge of honour, really, in many ways. So, Freshers Week, Freshers Week's gone. It's not been the best week of your life, but it was okay, and you've made friends and things.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about some of the things you've been to Freshers Week. Do all these clubs in York put on student nights?
Yeah, you have, like, a Freshers wristband for the first week, and so you've got, like, lots of different club nights, but they're pretty much the same, really, I think. It's like what you do before was kind of different. So we did, like, a pub quiz and then a night out one night. There was, like, bingo one night. I'm trying to think what else. Quite a bit of it I didn't go to, really, because they've got, like, trampoline parks, but sometimes they're at about 6 p.m. and you don't really feel like going to a trampoline park at 6 p.m. They did, like, a festival-themed thing that was actually at the campus. They did a silent disco, but that was really dead, so didn't really go there.
And you've put your name down for various societies.
Yeah, there's literally a society for absolutely everything. Like, I'm trying to think of some of the weirder ones. There's like Dungeons and Dragons Society, roller disco. I'm meant to be going to a taster session of roller disco tonight.
Yeah.
There's a fetish society.
A fetish society?
Yeah. No, because I thought this will be really good for the podcast, so I signed up to the mailing list for you because I thought and you couldn't believe, like, the two people, as they were stood there, I was like, wow, you are. I didn't know what to say. It's like Deadly Sins Icebreaker, What is Kink, Curiosity Night, Rope Workshop.
A rope workshop.
I know. Isn't that insane?
It is insane.
Yeah.
You've not joined yet, though.
No, oh my gosh, I would not be caught dead.
So the sort of people who join will be sort of goths, people that you see hanging around wearing black, those sort of people, do you think?
I don't know.
I'm just wondering what...
Wouldn't know.
Fetish society. Clearly, because of health and safety, there won't be, you know, fetishes in the way that we may have understood them from Max Mosley, who was head of Formula One and all that. It's not going to be, you know, not one of those fetish things that ends up on the front page of the Sunday papers, one assumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the university does have a sort of pastoral, a duty of pastoral care, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, well,
there's lots of other ones as well, that rowing and sailing and skiing and
but you signed up for
animal welfare, model UN.
What about political societies?
They've got, there's a Labour society. They've not got a Green Society, but they've got like an Extinction Rebellion group, which is essentially the same. Yeah, they've got York Tories, but it was so funny. Out there, like Freshers' Fair, the Tories like looked so much like exactly how you would imagine Tories to look. And they were all like along one big table, and then the Labour was next to them, and they were wearing like suits, and like the girls were dressed quite fancy and stuff. And the Labour people were wearing T-shirts that said, "Never kissed a Tory" on.
So those are two tables that weren't going to get together.
Yeah.
For Freshers' Week.
I don't think so.
It's interesting, you know, going on your campus there at York, which is a big campus university, and it's a town in its own right, really.
Yeah, it's big.
And it's, you know,
it's only got one shop there.
Yeah, but if you go on the just outside where you are, you know, if you just drive down the road a bit, or in your case, walk down the road. Those streets are just full of students. I never saw anybody who wasn't a student.
There are residential houses around there, see them, really.
I think they must sort of board up their houses and stay inside. But students all over the place, so you are... Yeah. And I'm just wondering...
The actual city is not there.
No,
the city is a lot more touristy.
You're way out of the city.
We're not out. 25-minute walk.
It's a 25-minute walk. Yeah. Oh, that's not too bad. It seems in the car, it seems to be way out because I drove.
Yeah, but we're not that far out.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if you're keeping in touch with the world at large while you've been...
Kind of. Feels like a different world, though.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah.
Let me tell you about Mark Rylance and see if you support...
Mark Rylance of...
The fine actor Mark Rylance, who was in Bridge of Spies.
Yes, okay. That? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, right, I know
and
who he is
he's
now.
He's been on the
TV. Yeah, 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 never mind.
Quite distinctive-looking actor. He's decided that he's not going to work with the Royal Shakespeare Company anymore because they take some sponsorship from BP. He said, "I do not wish to be associated with BP any more than I would with an arms dealer, a tobacco salesman, or anyone who willfully destroys the lives of others alive and unborn, nor, I believe, would William Shakespeare." And a number of other people, actors, Simon Callow, for instance, and one or two other people, Matthew Paris, who's a newspaper columnist, have taken to task on what Shakespeare would get involved in. Shakespeare actually was a man for whom the play was the thing, and he couldn't care less about where the money came from. And to keep your show on the road and your players fed and lodged, you took what you could get from whoever would give it to you. And Simon Callow said the same. He said, "Shakespeare's company, which was called the Lord Chamberlain's Men, often played at court for the monarch of a regime that operated massive secret surveillance of the population, subjecting suspects to savage torture and sudden death." And Shakespeare
didn't
mind.
Which is pretty bad.
Yes, that is. But what I'm saying is, do you think you can, as Mark Rylance seems to be doing, take a stand like that, or do you think...
I think he said the wrong word by saying, "Nor do I think Shakespeare would," but I think apart from that, he's pretty spot on, really. Because he's Mark Rylance, though. Like, I think he's doing the right thing as Mark Rylance, because, yeah, he wouldn't want to be seen on the face of a cigarette box, but... I think if you were a new actor or whatever...
We're all still using petrol, you know. I mean, nobody's going to... petrol station. I think.
They can get their funding in other ways, whereas you can't really get petrol without being petrol. Do you get what I mean?
No, but it's all interlinked, isn't it? It just seems... It seems so piecemeal, just deciding...
Yeah, so then what's the alternative? Just never do anything?
No, I think the alternative is to make your stand maybe somewhere else, somewhere where it would...
You're always, literally no matter what you decide to take a stand on, you're going to get judged for it.
rather than something that isn't going to affect you in, you know, he's never going to be unemployable, Mark Rylance. But what might happen is the Shakespeare Company might not get that bit of funding, and stagehand, lowly paid stagehands might find that they're out of it. Do you know what I mean? That everything has consequences.
Yeah. But then BP, like, if they weren't funding so many of these arts festivals, would then their sort of public profile change so that they'd be held more accountable?
I don't know. It just seems to me that people don't think these things through entirely, which brings us on to the Extinction Rebellion. By stopping the traffic in London for a short time and annoying a lot of people, and presumably making a lot of other people drive round further, you know, drive a longer route and therefore use more fuel, are they achieving what they set out to achieve? Or are there better ways to do it? The better ways to argue it, maybe?
There's really no way to, like, make a statement or, like, a protest without it kind of affecting someone adversely. So then, again, it's like, what else do you want them to do?
But you haven't joined the Extinction Rebellion people at university?
I haven't. I did speak to them at the thing, but I didn't join them because, just because of time, really, constraints.
Fair enough. Nobody's going to point a finger at you for not joining Extinction Rebellion. What about your friends that you made at university? Do you talk about politics?
We do talk about politics, yeah. We do. We have, like, debates about more kind of, like, generalised politics, like left and right, and we had a talk about denuclearisation and stuff the other day. Had a talk about, like, feminism one day.
This is just with your mates informally?
Just chats, yeah.
Yeah. Are they all feminists, the girls?
The girls...
Because we were talking about makeup. Tell me what you were all saying about makeup.
Oh, we were talking about whether makeup is, like, a societal kind of pressure, and whether women are, like, lying to themselves when they say, I do it just for me, like, it's not for anyone else, and is it a confidence thing and whatnot, that kind of stuff.
So makeup is a feminist issue, as far as
makeup as a feminist issue.
That's what you were talking about, just in your kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, you seem to have tanked to it very well.
I think so. Happy. Yeah, it's hard to know.
I mean, you seem happy.
Yeah, I am, but it's still hard. Like, there's still moments where you, like, it's more busy now, so I think it's good. But that's the first week, because you're not really doing much in the daytime. It's quite, you're like, oh, what do I do?
Yeah. Well, I'll probably have to tell you what's happening in the world. We do have a big picture of Kim Kardashian.
Oh, really? I don't know what's going on.
Well, you see, I've been relying on you over the last 70-odd episodes already tell me to keep up with the Kardashians. There she is, Kim Kardashian.
Not even seen the... Wait, is this her new skin?
No, you could tell me about
underwear.
That. No, this is not her new skin underwear. This is the fact that the Kim Kardashian, which is a sort of operation, I think we mentioned before, the BBL, the Brazilian butt lift.
Right.
It's now being banned.
Really?
Which I think is a good move. Because people have been having it.
Holy moly.
Holy moly indeed. British plastic surgeons are considering a ban on the procedure known as a Kim Kardashian, which appeals to women who want a larger backside. The move comes amid mounting concern about the Brazilian butt lift, which has the highest death rate of all cosmetic surgery.
Oh, my gosh.
I wouldn't go in
for... Died?
I would want, if I was having cosmetic surgery...
100%
probably too late now. Yeah, precisely. I would want them to have a death rate of naught. That would be, to me, an acceptable death rate.
Yeah, well, no one's ever died from, like, a nurse job, have they?
I think it has happened. I think it has happened with the...
Not really.
I think it has happened, but it's very rare. But the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons will vote, about to vote, whether it should ban it. But it looks like there's going to be a ban on the Brazilian butt lift, which I don't think is anything that you'd have probably considered. But Kim Kardashian sort of popularised it. Tell me about the skin thing.
No, she's just come out with this new, like, body-shaping underwear stuff.
Oh, so that's
Spanx. That was it. I thought that might be it. Yeah, yeah. Exactly, that's Spanx.
But it's got the Kim Kardashian
I think it's called Skin or something. Skims. It's called Skims.
Skims.
S-K-I-M-S.
Right. And presumably if you have a sort of Kardashian-style backside, it clings.
Skims it.
A couple of emails, Ruth. This is James Blacklock has sent three quotes for you. These are inspirational quotes.
Oh, should I have a pen and paper?
No, it's all right. You'll remember them. Find out who you are and do it on purpose. We cannot direct the wind, but we can adjust the sails. If you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one. Now, he says, I think Ruth should be able to identify the author that these quotes are often are most often attributed to. That's James in Cheshire. Can you tell me which author of those quotes? Find out who you are and do it on purpose.
I feel like they could be just some... Maybe have they been like wrongly attributed to someone?
No, they're quotes, all three of them, attributed to Dolly Parton.
Yeah, exactly. She's so wise.
There you go. Neil Vicker was commenting on... Not last week, it's like a fortnight since we've been here. But when we were last doing it, we were talking about songs that were politically incorrect. Songs that you could say
I remember.
In the 70s and 80s, but not now. He's come up with his own analysis of a song called All Rise by Blue.
Are you familiar
with All Rise by Blue?
No, but I know Blue.
Well, basically, it's all wrong, the song, he says, because it uses... He is a lawyer. One of my best friends, he's a lawyer. And he says, as a barrister, he's more than a lawyer, he's a barrister, he's dissected All Rise by Blue, and they've used all the wrong legal terms. Like they do in a lot of legal dramas on the telly. They say, the song goes, and if you thought you had me fooled, I'm telling you now, objection overruled. Well, he says, look, either Blue are attempting to overrule the judge or they're addressing someone in the public gallery, possibly a witness. Either is not allowed. And they say All Rise and it should be All Stand, etc. And he's gone through it in some detail that we needn't go into exactly. But those are the only two emails we've got.
Only got two emails? It's been ages.
Well, that's the reason, because we've not plugged the address.
So we should do that now then.
We certainly should.
It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's Martin and Ruth Podcast, all one word, obviously, all lowercase. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com, because I know you like to say it three times.
Rule of three.
But while we were talking about music, should we have some music after the break?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So a bit of music now, Ruth. We'll start with yours this week. What is it?
It is Used to Love by Alfie Templeman.
We used to be good friends. Now we both have different ends. So we're walking on the moon. Feet first, we were always tired. Laid back, we were always high. Somehow we lost control.
Well, that could have been one of mine.
It was just like a chilled out song.
Chilled out, yeah.
Yeah, so Alfie Templeman, he was born in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
2003, Dad.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
I know. That's ridiculous to me. To a musical family in Bedfordshire, he was encouraged to play music by his mum and whatever.
To me, he's been listening to his dad's record collection, I would say.
he was used recording software perfectly when he was like 13, and then his mum, but he was only instrumental, and then his mum persuaded him to include singing on his songs. And then 2 years on, in 2018, he put out his debut EP, Like an Animal, and he was only 15 at the time, but this is his new song, which is called Used to Love, which came out on October 3rd of this year.
Well, I'm going a little bit further back in time, it'll surprise you, and I'm going to revisit the joys of Petula Clark. Now, Petula Clark, as far as you're concerned, only ever made one record, which was Downtown. She actually made loads of records, had a fantastic career, which is she's still having a fantastic career.
Downtown.
I'll tell you more. You say that, I'll tell you more about it afterwards. This track's called Don't Give Up. Yeah, that's Petula Clark and Don't Give Up, and it was written by Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch. And I think the interesting thing about it is Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch.
It sounded exactly like Downtown.
It sounded very much like Downtown. That's
so
true.
She did one song and then just did that song
no,
a couple of times.
No. She did loads and loads of songs. I Know a Place, which again sounded a bit like Downtown.
Tell me one song that doesn't that she did that doesn't sound anything like Downtown.
This Is My Song, which was a Charlie Chaplin.
Wasn't even her own song then, that one?
Well, no, he wrote it. She never wrote. She wasn't a songwriter.
She wasn't a songwriter.
She was in partnership with Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch, which was the whole point I was about to make, is that if Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch had been based in the Brill Building in New York, they would stand comparison with Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil and Phil Spector and Ellie Greenwich and Carole King and Jerry Goffin and all those people, and Neil Diamond and all those songwriters from New York. But they were British songwriters, and she had an amazing career. Do you know when she was born?
Downtown?
No, she was born. She may very well have been born downtown. She was born in London, so you can't say she was born
downtown.
Downtown, really. But so how appropriate that she had such a big hit with the song from where she was born.
Downtown.
Do you want to know the year? The year was 1932. Do the math.
That's a long time ago. Yes. You want me to actually do the math? Okay, 68 plus 19, 87.
Yes,
she's 87 now.
She's now 87 years old.
Still alive, though.
Still alive, still working. She's a British singer, actress and composer, so she has written songs, whose career spans 8 decades. She was a child star. She's been in business for 8 decades, she made a message. Now, what's interesting from your point of view is that during the 50s, she started recording in French. She had a big hit in France called Ya Ya Twist. And that's where there's a whole genre of music in French, which you'll have heard it from François Hardy, those people, which is called ya-ya music.
I have heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, well, she did the ya-ya twist, and she had international success in both English and French. In 1957, she would have been just 25 at that age, she was invited to appear at the Paris Olympia, where despite her misgivings, she was received with acclaim. The following day, she was invited to the office of Vogue Records, which is the big French record label back in the 50s, to discuss a contract. And it was there that she met Claude Wolff, who became her husband.
Interesting.
50s we're talking here. She was immediately attracted to him, and she worked with him, and then she signed up, and eventually they got married. Gradually, she moved further into the continent, recording in German, French, Italian and Spanish, and establishing herself as a multilingual performer. So at a time when we're moving out of Europe, 50 years ago, she was moving into it.
Lovely. And,
yeah.
Good for old Petula.
Yeah. But that's a great track, I think. Do you not think it's a great track? And do you not think she's...
Downtown's good.
Highly under... Well, yeah, but that's a great track. Don't Sleep in the Subway. I'm going to play...
That one sounds a lot like Downtown.
Well, only in that it's her, it's the same style, it's the same composers. It's like if you picked up a Beatles album from the 1960s, you could probably find 3 or 4 tracks on the album. And, you know, the Beatles were the most varied, you know, genre-wise.
Yeah, okay,
you know,
fair enough.
You could probably find 4 or 5 tracks that sound quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if you listen to any of those people that you like, Loyal Carner and those people, you will find a similarity,
yeah.
Billie Eilish... you'll find a similarity.
You're right, yeah.
So don't diss Petula Clark. The whole point of that was trying to gain more respect for Petula Clark.
I respect her.
Good. Good. Anyway, there you are. Those are those tracks this week. What should you do if you want to hear more of those tracks?
Just go downtown. No, go to the Spotify playlist, type in either Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and either of those will take you to the playlist.
An interesting thing about us empty nesters is that we are almost empty nesters, would be empty nesters if we didn't have your brother with us. I mean, for podcast purposes, you moved straight out. He moved straight in on the exact same day. Mm. He moved in that morning when you moved out.
Yeah, I know.
So I didn't have a chance to work out what it was like to be a proper empty nester.
Well, you will be in a couple of months.
But we were mildly. I mean, I thought it was quite a good thing that you hadn't, that you didn't phone up much. But your mum was sort of mildly disturbed that you weren't.
I rang a lot in the first like 2 days, and then not as much after that. It's really hard. Like you feel like you've been pulled from this like new world you're trying to create back to what you know and like. Yeah, I think it makes it more difficult.
But now I get the impression after these couple of weeks, you're fine either way. Because I thought it was quite a good thing. When your mum said to me, oh, she's not phoned, I said, well, that's good, isn't it? You know, it means that she's sort of settling in. But now it seems, now there's more chance that you might phone.
Yeah, I think now I'll phone more like how is normal, rather than like 3 times in an hour and then not at all for like 4 days.
Yeah, they always say that the best way to get your children to phone you when they move to university...
Offer them money, yeah.
No. Oh. Is change your Netflix password. And then there's
no... you show Netflix.
Oh, you're not using it? So what are you watching?
I use David's Netflix.
All right.
I've been watching, you know, The Circle... When I've got like a spare 20 minutes, that's what I've been catching up on.
You're
still got Zoe Ball's son in it.
Zoe Ball's son, yeah. Who's
I'm still behind. I'm still behind, so I can't really speak on it.
No, well, we've not watched.
But Zoe Ball's son's on it. People really like this old guy called Tim. I think those things will probably still be true.
It's Tim the Monk. Yeah. What's happened in Sanditon? Have you been watching?
I've not been watching because I thought you were going to wait until I come home and we were going to binge them.
Yes, I'm fine with that.
But have you watched them already?
I've seen them, but I'll see them.
Look, see, you said you wouldn't watch them.
Well,
you said to me.
You were saying.
I won't watch them and we'll save them all and then watch them in a row when you get home.
I'll save them all.
Yeah, no, but that's not the whole deal. You disappointed in yourself?
Am I disappointed in myself? I'm watching. Yeah, I am a bit disappointed with myself.
Because you would have had more fun if you'd have watched. Did you watch them on your own or did you watch them with mum?
I watched them with mum.
Oh. You both watched them?
But I'm going to watch them.
Snakes.
I will watch Snakes. Is this a new one?
Everyone says Snakes. Do Snakey?
I've never heard you say Snakes in the past. Is this something you picked up from these posh university friends?
I've said that loads of times. I've said that on the podcast, I'm sure.
I don't think so. Here's something interesting, Ruth. Figures show that veterinary training has the biggest gender gap of any university subject grouping.
Wow.
The ratio of applications to veterinary science degrees starting this autumn was 7 female school leavers to every 1 male. Bigger than the imbalance in the teaching profession, any of the others. Professor of General Practice at the Royal Veterinary College, Jill Madison, said, I think there are a number of factors for the gender imbalance. One is that men are going to other professions, particularly the finance industry.
Yeah.
Veterinary science doesn't have very high earnings compared with other similar industries such as law and medicine. So, no.
I thought vets got paid a shit ton.
They charge a lot of money, but apparently the actual rates of pay.
Is it not just more of a like animal sensitive stereotype thing?
Well, it is, but I'm surprised that it's a stereotype that's still...
I think if you do economics, that's apparently really, like, just basically all boys.
Because
and
they
maths want, yes, a lot of boys.
Because they want to be bankers. Because they've seen, I suppose...
They've seen the Wolf of Wall Street.
They've seen the Wolf of Wall Street. They've seen also the fact that how they can get increased status by having a lot of money. I mean, and whatever you say and how politically correct people are, they still are impressed. I mean, I suspect even...
Who are still impressed?
Girls.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, it's a good way
to
get...
It's
a good way to get girls having lots of money, I would think. And that's
still, and on that note...
still a strong motivation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking back to my own university days, and
I think that's still true.
I think it's totally true.
Yeah.
It's as true today as it was. Probably even truer now.
Truer?
truer than it was.
Really? I think it's probably absolutely equal.
No, I think it's more true now.
Why do you think it's more true now?
Because there's more, because you're actually paying for university degrees and you're not just dossing about and you look on it as a financial transaction, you think, well, this should be a financial transaction which results in my earning way more money than I would if I'd done something else. And I was quite happy to do, you know, airy-fairy, hippie-ish subjects like, you know, English and German and that sort of thing. Whereas nowadays you think to yourself, well,
Why am I bothering spending all this money to do a degree?
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe true. Yeah, maybe that is a factor.
Yeah, and you know, if you can turn up to a date in a nice car, as opposed to turn up to a date in, you know, a pair of sandals and a hippie haircut, as we did, you will impress a girl more.
So, did you go to school in Glasgow or California? What are you on about? Acting like you blooming went to Woodstock every weekend.
I went to university.
You went to university for about 6 months in Strathclyde?
Yeah, I went to university for the first year. I lasted the first year at Strathclyde in Glasgow.
Yeah.
But in those days, people used to, if you were at university, it doesn't matter whether you were at Strathclyde or Keele or the University of Manchester Institute of Science and Technology, you still pretended you were in San Francisco because that's what you did in the late 60s, okay. Early 70s. Do you have a meme of the week?
Yeah.
Have you had time with all the drinking and falling over?
I've not done as much Instagram, I don't think, as I have,
you
I have done
do.
In the past. I don't know.
You can't even be bothered completing
right.
The full sentence, can you?
At the bookstore, me. Do you have any books on turtles? Cashier? Hardback? Me. Yeah, with little heads.
Yeah, it's an old
and
one.
Then I liked this, but this isn't really funny. I just thought it was interesting. When did we replace the word said with was like? You know, I do it all the time. I'm like, oh, they were like, and she was like, blah, blah, blah. When it occurred to us that said implies a direct quote, while was like clarifies that you mean to communicate the person's tone and general point without quoting them word for word.
That's
so
true.
So was like is actually better than said.
Yeah, and sometimes in the present sense. So I'm like this, and she's like that. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. And she's like, so you can have all sort of...
So you see, so the word like is incredibly intelligent, and
incredibly
I enjoy it a lot.
Intelligent, Ruth.
Right.
So hopefully we will do one next week.
Yeah.
And catch up on what you're actually doing at university, because by next week
I'll have
the
had more like proper lectures
over
and stuff.
And,
the party will have been over.
Well,
apart
from the weekends, it's not going to be so much going out during the week, is there? I wouldn't have thought.
No, I don't think so.
Hmm.
Right.
Although
well,
still a bit of that goes on as well. So we look forward to finding out what's happening next week.
We'll see.
Meanwhile, just a reminder, if you do want to send us an email, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.